Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Lucas and Vincent were not in the mainstream of gay life.
I was saving body parts such as skulls.
Doesn't it bother you that he's a fag?
You have done me a great service. Now I must service you.
The drugs were always a cry for attention, for somebody to pay attention to me before I, you know, kill somebody.
You can imagine what it smells like if you go into a closed room.
Something is trying to get inside my body.
Yeah, she's female and she's waiting for you in the cabana. And you want to sleep with me.
Buckle up, sodomites, and welcome to the Sinister Sissies podcast, your guide to true crime, horror, and everything man on man and macabre. I'm Jared, your master of depravity, staring at the beautiful face of my filthy little slave, Sam Hamilton.
Lock me up, Daddy. He's been plying me with wine tonight.
He's had literally one glass.
That's not true. It's been two and a half.
Okay.
And I do feel a little buzz coming on. I'm just saying.
Well, today's a bit of a slightly sad day. Not as sad as what the next episode's going to be. We have a little announcement.
It's the penultimate episode of Sinister Sissies.
We are ending the podcast in one more episode's
After
time.
After this episode, we're going into the grave and you're all going to like fill in the soil.
It's a bit sad.
But I'm going to put half a hand out of the grave because I'm going to
Sam's going to keep going.
I'm going to do a different horror-themed podcast next year, which we'll talk about that later because today's about us, Jared.
It is. It's about, you know, the end of an era,
I suppose. The end of a sissy, homoerotic, homosexual era.
I love that you still avoid the word queer. In your new podcast, are you going to use the word queer?
It'll be all about being queer. Although, not as much as that show we're reviewing about, Come and Talk, reviewing next episode.
Oh, yeah. We'll save the critiques for that. So
coming soon, a lot of queerness.
Sad news, but we have a good episode for you today. We are doing two different bits of media.
But also, sorry that this year has been so disjointed.
Oh, yeah, look. Okay, part of the reason that we're ending it is clearly we cannot commit to the old schedule.
It's a lot harder in this, you know, post-pandemic or pretending the pandemic isn't existing world to...
We're fancy, busy people, Sam. Clearly.
Yes, well, unfortunately, I'm just poor and having to work often 6 days a week, so it makes it hard to...
It's hard to do your little podcasts.
Yes, if we had, like, some servant who... drink Jared's blood and then edit the podcast for free. That would be great. But unfortunately...
I thought you were thinking of some sort of sugar daddy to pay for the podcast endeavor.
I mean, either or.
so we could quit our jobs. That would be nice if anyone's really tough.
More viable to have some twink that like wants to like, drink your blood and then like use that energy absorbed.
That is my experience.
Spend yes. 6 hours editing.
Well, okay. The episode today, though, is two bits of media. We have... It's a fucking horrible title. Dahmer-Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, which is the new Netflix series, which is causing a lot of controversy.
And also just Hellraiser. Just Hellraiser. Keep it simple.
Hellraiser, this year, are we using the term requel? Is that what we do now?
Well, I mean, it's meant to be a reboot, but I would say it could just fit in as a sequel, really.
Yeah, they don't contradict anything.
No. So previously. You could just like see it as canon, I think.
So a requel. I'm going to call it a requel. So Hellraiser 2022. But let's start with Dahmer. Here we are.
Home sweet home.
Babe, I love you so.
Oh, what is that smell?
Dharma is created by Ryan Murphy of American Horror Story fame.
And Jared's favorite show of all time, Scream Queens.
So Sam and I have been like messaging about this project for quite a while. I think you sent me first when it got announced that...
Yeah, because I'm like, Jared's going to be so excited, but then so pissed that Ryan Murphy's involved.
I was so fucking cynical about this.
But this is perfect for Ryan Murphy because his thing is that he does a great first season and forget, like he loses... traction because he always has too many projects on the go.
So my initial wariness about this is that I thought he was going to be cutesy,
like fun drama.
Yeah, and like
the series is not fun. I'm actually it's one of my biggest shocks of 2022. And trust me, I've had a lot of shocks in my life this year that this has been like one of the most popular Netflix series ever and top 10 most popular ever. And it's so bleak, so morose, so slow moving, and just so visceral. Like, it's... Sorry, I'm slurring, but I said visceral. Yeah. But it's, like, not something that I can imagine appealing to the masses. But even the sandwich girl at work was like, I love this show Dharma.
Do you know what? I loved this show Dharma. Well, I was not expecting it at all. I came in with the lowest of expectations, and I really, really enjoyed it.
See, I found it difficult to watch because I felt like it was very bleak. And
it's incredibly bleak.
And I didn't learn anything new.
So that's a fair enough criticism. You didn't get all the way through though, did you?
I didn't get all the way through, but I was just finding this a little like...
Too much.
But also I thought Evan Peters did a great performance and I thought the show was well made and definitely captured all the things that I kind of expected it to, but at the same time, because I'm a serial killer enthusiast anyway, I wasn't like really learning anything. I feel like if I was an outsider, which is why everyone loves this, they didn't know about Jeffrey Dahmer.
So the first half, absolutely that. The first half of Dahmer is it's just the crime. Like, so we know the crime, and then it goes into the trial at a certain point. The kind of second half takes an interesting turn that I wasn't expecting. There's a lot of, I don't know if you got to the episode about one of his victims who was deaf.
Well, that was the big critically acclaimed episode.
Yeah, so there's a whole episode where like it's largely done through sign language, and I thought that was incredibly well done. And then afterwards there's kind of the political fallout, you know, that there were these police officers that ignored this crime for a period of time. There's lengthy discussions about Glenda Cleveland's life, who, it should be noted, Glenda Cleveland in the show is not necessarily that representative of Glenda Cleveland the person, but she did go through a lot of shit. And so I thought that was quite well done as well. But yeah, I like bleak horror, and so I enjoyed the first half of it, and then I did like that the weird socio-political turn in the end.
Well, look, I can't comment on the very end; it didn't make it that far.
Yeah,
I thought it was very well made, very well acted. Everything about it was like, I don't know, maybe I found it too difficult to really attach myself to it because it felt so close to reality in a lot.
Yeah,
in a lot of it, not all of it.
Yeah,
but I think a lot of it was just kind of like, this is really like distressing for me almost, because it was so, it's actually a compliment to the show because it wasn't Hollywood.
It wasn't stylized. There was no stylizing at all. No.
I mean, it was like visually stylized and stuff, but it wasn't like most of these serial killer adaptations take a lot of liberties and they try and almost add in like, suspense and almost a sense of like, camp or something.
Yes. That which is classic Ryan Murphy, which is what I was worried about.
Which usually removes like
the tension,
but yeah, this was just like so tense, and it really, yeah, it actually really rattled me watching it. So I mean, kudos to Ryan Murphy, you've
Well, I think the reason I like this is, like, he was the showrunner, but he didn't direct, he only directed some of the episodes,
yeah.
I think. And it was written a lot of them were written by this other guy, Ian Brennan, who I think wrote for Glee.
I think he's written with Ryan, like, a number of times.
Yeah.
Including on shows that you've hated.
Probably, yeah. So, I mean, both of them, it's a bit of a surprise for me that I enjoyed what they made. I thought it was relatively well made. I mean, I think there is a criticism that, like, does this story need to be retold again? And then, I mean, the biggest controversy has been the victims' families.
Mm. Well, yeah, I know that has been a big thing, like the sister of one of the victims.
Rita Isbell.
Yeah, and she was like, that was like literally my word for word. Like,
that's weird that they did that. Yeah.
That was my outfit. Like, I can't imagine what it would be like to see, like, your most traumatic memory, like, completely replay back to you like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I suppose it's maybe not a good thing, but the show, like we were saying, it wasn't really taking that many creative liberties. Like, that is really what happened. So if people are wanting to watch a reenactment of the crimes and the trial, like, especially that aspect of it, you are getting, like, a play-by-play.
Yeah. I think a journalist that was involved in the original investigation, she compared what was depicted versus real life, and her only criticisms were Glenda Cleveland didn't live next door to Jeffrey Dahmer. She actually lived across the street. And so that character, I think, was meant to be, what's the word for when they do that? But, like, the one character is representing a bunch of different people.
Yeah,
in the
story. What you mean. I can't remember the term. See, he's got me drunk. I've lost my limited memory and intellect is gone.
But so, yeah, so she's representing a number of different characters in that role. And then the other thing that the journalist said, the journalist now works for the police in a communications role. She said that it was wrong for them to depict the cops as being as racist and homophobic as they were.
I actually thought that the cops could have been depicted way worse.
I don't, yeah, as in, they weren't.
Not that it was a good depiction, but.
I mean, because obviously, like, in real life, they're not going to be a complete caricature.
No.
And it did wind back a bit, I think. It could have been much more caricatured than it was. Mm. But, like, they were her only criticisms about the difference between real life and the depiction.
But I guess that raises the debate of, yeah, like, why does this show exist in the first place? Because it is essentially, like,
yeah,
80% of it is, like, a play-by-play of what happened or what we... Obviously, the murders and stuff, we can never know exactly how they unfolded, but I guess a lot of the series is really just... You could read an article and it's kind of like watching, like, a really, like, high-budget, well-acted reenactment of the article.
I will say, I did an interview with ABC Adelaide last week, and the 50-something-year-old radio presenter had never heard of Jeffrey Dahmer before.
Well, I think a lot of people haven't. People are, like, I know someone older in my life, who was sending me, like, live reaction texts, being like, I can't believe this!
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it definitely, I guess it grabs people, because they just didn't know that this happened.
Which is very weird to me.
It's and, like, that people could be capable of... I guess it really does feel like a horror movie, but, like, it's real. So people are kind of, like, taken that, like, people are into, like, cannibalism and reanimation experiments, things like that. Like, and it's, you know, this has really happened.
There's, so that thing about the family backlash, there's been a lot of, I don't know, the takes, I understand what people mean when they say the family should have consented to this. Mm. But the reality is, like, with any kind of violent crime, if a production company approaches the victim's families, 90% of the time, they're going to say no.
Yeah, it's a tough...
And then what do you do?
It's a tough one. But I think that, like... See, my thing would be, if they were unearthing things that weren't already in the public arena, I would be like, this is a little bit wrong. Like, you should be, consulting the family. And I still think they should... I would never be able to ethically make this show myself and not consult with the family. So yeah. I guess I couldn't make this show, could I? But... Like, this stuff is already...
But if you really passionately wanted to make this and the family refused, would you just dump that idea?
I would, because I wouldn't be able to look back on it.
Okay.
And, like, in a positive way, I guess. Yeah. I would just see the whole thing. It would kind of, like, it would soil it for me.
Yeah.
But my devil's advocate side says that everything that's disclosed here, you could, like, I already knew about. Like, you can, like, you could... Sure, it's... like, giving that awareness to a larger audience, but it's not like it's taking, like, the best kept secrets of Dahmer's crimes and putting them on a pedestal. Like, these court hearings and stuff like that, you could access all that information anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm not... It's a tougher one. Personally, I wouldn't feel comfortable making this content, but like, it was out there already.
I think where I've kind of ended up is that if what you're making is like authentically good expression, then it's justified even if the family doesn't consent. And in like the polar opposite example that I can give, and I used this in an article recently, is The Haunting of Sharon Tate.
Well, yeah, well, those kind of movies, like the one with Hilary Duff as well.
Yes, so that is The Haunting of Sharon Tate.
And
there's
the other one, Wolves at Your Door, where they're like taking liberties with the story and it's...
So The Murder of Sharon Tate by the Manson family in both of those films. So in The Haunting of Sharon Tate, have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, but I just know Hilary played Sharon Tate.
It's played by Hilary Duff. She has psychic dreams of her impending murder. The murder is depicted fully and graphically on screen. And then afterwards, everyone meets in heaven.
Okay. I definitely don't need to. I kind of do want to watch it now. But you know, things like that, it's kind of like you're...
Like, you can't justify that film.
No. And same with Wolves at Your Door. I think a lot of people are like, what's the
point? I haven't seen that one. I wasn't aware of it.
It's got Katie Cassidy in it. She was like a popular scream queen in the 8 years ago.
Okay. We'll say.
But yeah, things like that, I guess, where it's kind of like... almost having fun with like tragedy.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, why? Like, you could just call this something else and use the same script and you don't need to be like, with the Sharon Tate that is, you know, it's like, you don't need to be calling this, but I guess they want that money. Everyone's going to watch a film that's called The Haunting of Sharon Tate.
It's exploiting from the name. Yeah. It's using someone's name to get people to watch a low quality movie that contributes nothing.
Yeah. Whereas this film is kind of just depicting events that happened and that are already on record as happening. So it's like, it's not really, you know, it's not like disclosing like any secrets or anything like that.
No.
So that's where like, and I called it a film, I think, TV series, whatever.
I mean,
this series is just kind of showing you what happened. And so I understand I'd be uncomfortable if I was the family and I probably wouldn't want it being made, but like it's funny that we're having this debate right now anyway, because our whole podcast is founded on
doing... Yeah, we do this. I don't think any family of a victim that, you know, we have discussed in this podcast would be happy that two random people in Australia are talking about their death. Like, as in, if I was to legitimately put myself in their shoes, I would say that's an entirely justified perspective.
Yeah, so it's an interesting debate, I guess, of like, when is entertainment crossing a line?
Yeah.
Into, you know, like an infringing on people's like right to privacy.
But I still think it's like a balancing, like, as in there's no simple rule to this.
Well, I think my rule is just similar to what I'm saying about the show. It's like, I guess we don't talk about things that aren't... like, we don't, like, reach out to victims' families and try and get, like, secrets about what happened.
No, we're not harassing families.
And then,
yes.
Like, I don't know, somehow trying to, like, romanticize that or...
Well, so that's the other big criticism of this, is the casting of Evan Peters and the potential that this is going to be, like, memifying or, like, valorizing a killer.
Sure, but, like, Evan Peters kind of does look like Jeffrey Dahmer, and he... I don't really know what they... I don't really have an answer to this.
I don't know. Part of me thinks that a bit of that is slightly moral panic. Like, it's slightly... because there are those, like, weird Tumblr things where, like, they're... you know, they have, like, a dedication page the school shoot.
We used to have this obsessed Sinister Sissies fan. No, sorry. An obsessed Richard Ramirez fan that we maybe I interacted with them at some point, but they were we were connected via Instagram at least.
Yeah.
And she like had like that. She was actually in love with Richard.
Yeah. So these things exist, whether or not they're like representative enough of a trend, I feel like is a bit, I don't know.
I feel like panicky. If people were romanticizing serial killers, it's not really like the show's fault. I think.
No, people were writing letters to Jeffrey Dahmer in prison. People were doing marriage proposals to Jeffrey Dahmer in prison. Like, this is not new.
No, I mean, if you think about even things like, this is going a bit off topic here, but like 50 Shades of Grey, where people are like, I want Christian Grey to be like my lover. And
yes.
It's like, this is like some abusive, like depraved man.
Yeah.
And people kind of romanticize that, I guess, the darkness. I think it's when there's a hot person who has, like, a dark soul. And I mean, I've been guilty of this myself. But
look, and if it's self-aware fantasy, I'm kind of willing to let people go with it. But yeah, look, some of the weird parts of online have this component. I don't know, because it was the same thing with the Zac Efron, Ted Bundy movie.
Well, I guess it's like when you're putting a Hollywood star as this killer. So you are, in a way, like you know, I guess you are romantic. You're casting
someone who's
a
sex symbol. So, like, only cast ugly people.
Well, I think casting an overt sex symbol as a serial killer is kind of, like, tying these two things together and, like, is it appropriate?
Okay.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say Evan Peters is a sex symbol.
I don't think he is either.
For the horror community, he's a bit of an icon, I suppose.
He's people were describing him as, like, a teen heartthrob, and I'm like, really?
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, Hollywood tried to. He was in, like, Never Back Down, and he played Silver Surfer. But I feel like it's only when he started being in Ryan Murphy things. I think he's the only actor
that's been in everything.
That has been in every... Maybe he wasn't in American Horror Story 1994. I think he might have had a break that year.
He was still watching these fucking shows.
I think he was in... You know, he was, like, one of those regular Ryan Murphy people.
Yeah.
And he definitely has a big fan base. But Jeffrey Dahmer in real life, the whole reason that he was able to lure in victims is because he was perceived as attractive. So it's like, yes, you can't cast...
In,
like,
this, like, shy way.
You can't really cast someone, but yeah, I guess it's tough when you cast, like, the Zac Efron casting in the Ted Bundy movie. It's like you're casting someone whose career is almost built off being a sex symbol.
Yeah. So, but it's also, like, Ted Bundy was an attractive man.
But,
like,
then he also was able to use his charisma and good looks to lure victims. So it's are we meant to cast, like, someone who's not? I don't know. It's a tough debate.
Anyone that has this really definitive morally certain position on this stuff, I feel like is full of shit, or is not taking into account.
But what did you feel about the presentation of Dahmer as an individual?
It was not sympathetic, because that is my biggest thing with Dahmer, is that sometimes the true crime treatment of Jeffrey Dahmer is overly sympathetic. He's viewed as this, like, tortured guy. Where I don't think in the Netflix Dahmer series he is viewed as a tortured guy. He's viewed as creepy.
I think they definitely tried to portray that he had undergone trauma.
Because he had a family background.
But
that is
tough,
true.
Because, like, yeah, it's like you have to show that is telling context. Someone's story that is relevant. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, like, when victims were involved and stuff like that, they never tried to, like, make you root for, like, there was never a vibe of, like,
him, like, sobbing. Like, I can't remember which. There's been a couple of Dahmer biopics, but, like, I remember one. They did one where he was, like, sobbing throughout the murder. And I'm like, he just wasn't that he viewed these people as a means to an end. Mm. He wasn't that troubled by it. He didn't enjoy killing because he was concerned with the body. But yeah, I don't think it was overly sympathetic. And I feel like the fact that people are disgusted by the depictions of the murder, rather than viewing that as a sign of it being sensationalist, I think that's a sign of it being good expression.
Well, he's definitely portrayed as being an unsettling person.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, though, because, yeah, people are, like, being like, how hot is, like, Evan Peters as Jeffrey Dahmer?
But is that just weird teen-ish culture,
the Halloween
though?
Costumes, etc.
So the Halloween... Okay, we need to talk about the Halloween costumes, because that's a weird thing, because dressing up as Jeffrey Dahmer for Halloween has been such a normalized thing for so long, and now this year...
This year it's a no.
This year eBay has taken Jeffrey Dahmer costumes off their site. They've cited this policy that they'd never used up until now. You can still get Jack the Ripper and Lizzie Borden. You know what I mean? Like, it's
but
so...
I guess the thing with Dahmer is that it has happened in the last, like, 40 years. Like, it is...
Sure.
It is recent enough that, like, victims' families, etc. are still alive.
eBay still had an Osama bin Laden costume.
I mean, no comment there. But, like, Jack the Ripper and stuff, because it's so far in history that no one has any direct...
Sure.
Like, you know, descendants or family members that were involved.
The perversity of that thinking, though, is Dahmer's family have had to deal with that for fucking, what, 30 years, 20-something years or whatever it is. No, maybe 30 years.
Well, since he was... wasn't he arrested in 91? I could be wrong.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's over 30 years ago. Shit, I was like, oh, it's 1992. It's not 30 years. Oh wait,
we're old, Sam. We have to deal with that.
Fuck.
So they've had to deal with this shit for 30 years, and we're now this year being like, well, no, that's totally unacceptable. Like, that just seems really.
Well, I guess it's
stupid.
It's partially due to, I guess, increased discourse because of the series.
Yes, also, that's what I mean.
It's also like
and people want to be scolds, and
but
so
it's also a cultural thing where it's kind of like. You know, I can't, it's like the internet culture of, like, policing people. I mean, once again, I would never dress up as Jeffrey Dahmer. I think it's inappropriate.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, like...
Probably would have. If I was younger, I probably would have.
We all make mistakes when we're young, Jared. But, yeah, but I think a lot of it, too, is, like, a bit performative. Like, you cannot dress the... Blah, blah.
The thing is, I know that in 3 years' time, this is going to go away and people will be back doing it.
But I do think it's good in a way that people are... There is an uproar, because I guess it is showing that, like, people are... Like,
I don't trust that it's genuine. I just don't trust that it's genuine. I think people are going with the moment.
I think it is important to discuss if certain things are appropriate, and I don't think it's necessarily appropriate to dress up as a serial killer from modern times that has, you know, caused trauma to people and their families, intergenerational trauma, but maybe just a bit insensitive, particularly this year, because, like, these people have all had to relive what's happened to their family and friends, and then seeing people walking around like it's a joke.
Yeah.
Like, if I was attacked by someone, even if someone punched me in the face and I was traumatized by it, I wouldn't want to walk past someone who's dressed as the person that punched me in
but
the face.
But does that mean every episode that we've done of a recent killing is also highly inappropriate? We're ending the show, so it's fine.
Well, I think the difference between a podcast and a Halloween costume is people can volunteer to listen to the podcast. If someone steps into the party or event,
fair enough, yeah,
event or space you're in dressed as something that traumatizes you, you can't escape it. People who listen to our podcast have to choose. Whereas if you are, like, on Facebook and see a photo of someone dressed up as Jeffrey Dahmer at a costume party, or you're at a costume party, you're not choosing
to
interact with it. That's my read. I'd love to hear people's
What are people's takes on this? Because I don't think I have a firm view. Overall, though, I mean, I personally would recommend checking out this series with a proviso that it's a lot. And if you're not ready for that,
it's downbeat.
Yes.
I'm just so shocked it's so popular just because it is.
I am a little bit as well because it's definitely the kind of horror that I like eat shit and die real... awful horror.
I would get it if it was like 5 episodes just because it's so long-winded.
Yeah.
And like it's just like bleak.
It is a bit too long. I'll say
from the get-go though. It's not like something you could be like, oh, I rewatched Dharma. It was, you know what I mean? Like
I'm just
shocked that it's been, but I guess people are very intrigued by, I guess this is the biggest scale serial killer series we've probably ever had. So maybe that's part of it too. It's new to the general public.
Should we move on to Hellraiser?
Let's move on to something that's... We're going from
a little bit lighter.
From fiction to non-fiction.
I actually don't think Hellraiser was dark enough for me.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It's really nice.
You can hold it.
What is it?
It's a puzzle.
And it's almost finished. Keep going.
So if I solve it, do I get a prize?
I do.
Hellraiser 2022 is a recall / reboot of the original Hellraiser, which was an adaptation of Clive Barker's novel, The Hellbound Heart. So this version is directed by David Bruckner, and they have about 4 different screenwriters, which is never a good sign for something. Sam, I think we're going to differ on this one. What did you think of Hellraiser 2022?
I'm going to say that I enjoyed it in like a superficial way. Like I liked it, but it's not something that I'm going to like shake people and get them to watch. But I do think in terms of the Hellraiser franchise, which has gone...
Has had some fucking terrible, yes.
People make fun of Jason X for going to space. Hellraiser did that in part 4. So
yeah, and that was like, and it has
but that went it was like 1800s space ends like present day, I think. So they were doing something different, I guess. But
it's the guy from it's the guy from Parks and Rec is in that one as well. It's his very first role.
Well, there you go. That's where all people start in a horror movie sequel.
Yeah.
A random horror movie sequel. But I thought this one tied together like the themes quite well of like, you know, vices and like how far we'll go to kind of like feed.
I didn't think it was kinky enough. So this wasn't terrible. I will say that Jamie Clayton is quite good as the new Hell Priest / Pinhead.
Well, we can just call her Pinhead 2.0.
Yeah.
I think everyone's just calling her Pinhead.
Which is not easy to do. Like, I don't know if you saw those Hellraiser versions where they had, like, the fat Pinhead is what I'm calling it.
I think there's only one without Doug Bradley, right? Was there two?
There's two. I think, there's two different people and they didn't do a very good job.
Isn't it weird that Doug Bradley is such an iconic Pinhead, just due to the fact that Pinhead was never really the star of the Hellraiser films, not in the same way that like Freddy or Jason are.
No.
Like Pinhead was just kind of like, especially in the first film and the second one as well, Pinhead just kind of like floated in and out. Pinhead probably is in like 8 minutes of the first Hellraiser.
Do you know who was actually meant to continue on the franchise? It was meant to be the wife.
Julia.
The evil wife was meant to be the one to take on the franchise, and then the studio said no. Imagine the world in which we had Julia.
Well, she was like owning it.
She was great. I love the first two Hellraiser films. They're like one of my more favorite films.
Well, I think the third one took on a different tone anyway. So if Julia had have stayed on, she probably would have regretted it.
Yeah. I'm sure that actress did other things.
Hellraiser is an interesting franchise though, because you don't really meet anybody who's like a diehard Hellraiser franchise.
Not a franchise fan. Okay. No, I would never say that.
I love the first Hellraiser and Hellraiser 2.
Yeah.
And Hellraiser 3 I quite enjoy.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't really meet anybody who's, like, a Hellraiser completist. Like, I love, like, all... I don't even know how many there are. Nine.
When does the lady, the weird woman Hellraiser comes in later? And there's one where, like, the building is a giant
puzzle. I don't even know.
It gets weird.
I think the thing is the Hellraiser films, the later ones weren't really made of much love. Like, I think a lot of them were made just to sell some videos and keep the IP probably in, I think Dimension
had
the rights to it.
So, okay. So I think with this one, love the new Pinhead. That's great. And that's more in keeping with the Hellhound heart because it's the Hell Priest is described as being largely feminine, but gender ambiguous is the description in the actual novella. So I thought that was great. What I think they didn't do in this Hellraiser requel, though, is... So, okay, the opening scene where we have... I'm pretty sure he's meant to be, like, a rent boy, right?
He's meant to be a rent boy, yeah.
Why wasn't there no, like, sex before the killing?
Yeah, he was just kind of hanging out at this orgy, and he was like, yeah, but I'm here.
Like, it felt really, like, restrained on, like, the point of Hellraiser, which is meant to be, like, you're attracted to the extremes of pleasure... And that the extremes of pleasure include pain.
Whereas, yeah, I feel like this film was going for more of a, like, the extremes of pleasure are, like, excess and being. I think they're trying to go for more of a capitalist kind of narrative
in this one.
As opposed to, like, a psychosexual vibe. Which the other films, even the costuming and stuff in the first
Hellraiser. Was, like, bondage. Like, the whole thing was bondage.
Yeah, whereas this one, it didn't really go there. But it was about vices still. It was about addiction and addiction to wealth. And,
yeah.
You know, like... So I guess it was just trying to be a bit more, like, contemporary and mainstream, I guess.
I didn't love the main actress, putting it out there.
I thought she was fine.
Her name is Odessa Azion. She was just kind of there. There was a very hot... Her brother is played by a very hot actor.
Yeah, well, he's getting real life.
You
can get on that.
I've got a chance.
Yeah.
So, like, and that dynamic... bored the hell out of me.
Now, see, I liked that dynamic. That's why I was kind of sad. Because it's not really a spoiler to say this, but basically it's about two siblings who have a troubled relationship. And one of them suffers from addiction, the main character. Odessa Azion.
Hmm. We're probably saying that wrong.
Probably. Sorry, Odessa, if I'm saying that right. And her brother is kind of like her father. I don't know.
Yeah.
And he goes missing because of the Cenobites, and she has to sort of search for him.
Yeah.
And, And I really liked the film when it was sort of like leaning into their relationship and riding on their relationship and their dynamic. I didn't find the supporting characters to be that exciting.
The boyfriend, well, the boyfriend of the guy, the brother, and then also her, spoilers, the guy who ends up actually being in on a plot to get her into the Hellraiser box to serve the rich man. What happened to the rich man?
So, I'm going to go full spoilers.
Yeah, we're going full spoilers.
Okay. I mean, I guess it's been like, by the time this comes out, it'll be almost a month since the
film. Mainly because I think there's going to be a lot of people that have seen this movie that are listening to this that will want to know the details.
So, it was meant to be, like, the rich man was obsessed with, I guess, he was living an empty existence because he'd had everything that money could buy. Mm. And then once you unlock the puzzle box in these films, you get granted, like, an eternity of... You get to pick, like, a subcategory of pleasure, I guess. I'm not explaining this very well.
Was this always the case? I didn't remember it ever being... Yeah,
I don't think so.
But they were never genies.
But he chose, like... I can't even remember what his choice was. Let's just say it was, like...
And so it became this little, like intestine.
Yeah, it was, like, excess or something. But as a result, they were showing him, like, the excess of pain.
Yeah.
So they... He had like this, they had like put this gearbox inside him.
Which looked terrible.
That kept on turning around.
That was not like, a good effect.
Oh! Debatable. And then he was trying to get granted like a new, he was trying to make somebody else solve the puzzle box so that he could like reset things.
But how? Doesn't he need access to the puzzle box to get another wish?
Well, I suppose he was going to coerce them into making a wish in his favor.
I think, does that mean the rules of this are that you're cursed by the puzzle box? Wait, no, that doesn't make sense because several other people also got cursed by the puzzle box.
No, so the puzzle box will grant you a wish, but you need to offer it 7 sacrifices. I think that was the rule.
Oh, I gotcha.
And so he was then trying to get 7 sacrifices via this girl.
Yeah.
It's a bit convoluted when you...
I don't think it actually makes sense the more you think
basically,
about it.
Basically, he was betting on this girl to steal the puzzle box from his empty mansion...
And then sacrifice 7 people.
Yes. And he'd paid her boyfriend to lead her into the house.
Yeah.
My friend actually said this really well. The film's basically about the power of, like, being dickmatized. Like, this girl gets dickmatized by this hot guy into doing a fucked up thing for him and doesn't think about the consequences.
If it lent more into that, I think it'd be for it. Like, as in, like, we have one sex scene with them.
He fucks her really hard.
But it seems largely... desexualized as a film.
Well, I think the reason that you didn't really vibe with it is because it did differ from, I guess, the subtext of the Hellbound Heart and the Hellraiser mythology is rooted in kind of like sex and bondage and like sexual taboos.
They're also not like, they were very much depicted, the Cenobites were very much depicted in this as like clearly evil.
Yeah, they were
creatures.
Kind of like Silent Hill monsters. So I think
which is not what the original ones is that they're kind of ambiguous and that they are not, they're not trying to like trick you or anything like that. It's just that if you're wanting excess sensation, you need to take the whole package.
Yeah.
And that's what they're offering.
Well, I feel like this film was leaning less into sex and more just into, I guess,
torture porn.
Well, I guess the notion of like, you know, like, I guess in the society that we're currently living in, we have access to so much and we always want more. I think that the film is trying to talk about that. That, like even when we have everything, it's never enough. So,
have you heard of the version, I haven't got his name in front of me, the guy, the filmmaker who made Martyrs was offered at one point to make a Hellraiser reboot and he was going to set it in a gay leather bar.
I didn't hear about the gay leather bar place, but I remember when him and his partner got the film.
Yeah.
And then it just didn't work out. And then, this has been passed around since like 2008. Like, they've been trying to reboot Hellraiser for at least 15 years, I feel.
Do you know if it did well, like financially?
Well, it was straight to Hulu, so we can't know.
Oh, probably
not.
Know. Okay.
I actually think this is worthy of being theatrical, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it would have made $40 million or something at least.
So one of the reasons I think you liked it is... It did remind me a lot of an early 2000s horror.
And I think that the director, David Bruckner, actually says that he was influenced by 90s horror.
Yeah.
There was an interview where he was questioned about it. So other people have seen this.
Yeah. So it's very... I mean, I like Scream and I like some aspects of that. But yeah, there is a structure to that kind of horror film that this follows to a T, which the original Hellraiser didn't. The original Hellraiser is like weirdly like a melodrama. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's not a teen horror film.
No. Well, I mean, like, I guess the main characters in the original Hellraiser are like middle-aged
people,
plus, I guess, Christy, who's going to be 21 or something. But
and in the book is not actually his daughter, is like an assistant who's in love with him.
Oh, well, then you got to add another dynamic to it.
Yeah.
I probably would have preferred that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just like this film essentially as a popcorn movie. Like, I don't think too much of it, but I think that, like, the standards have become so low for anybody watching a Hellraiser film or anticipating a Hellraiser film that I just enjoy that this film was consistently dark in tone.
Yeah.
I always enjoy themes like addiction and, you know, sibling dynamics and stuff like that. So I was like engrossed in it, but I wasn't like I don't feel like I need to rewatch it.
It would be a good anytime. Sitting on the couch with friends movie.
And there were some good like jump scenes and good, like in some ways it kind of reminds me of a Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Yeah, I guess.
Because they were like, there was like that dream sequence where the hot brother gets like stabbed to the chains.
Yeah.
And, you know. Yeah, I feel like it had a good atmosphere. I feel like David Bruckner, based off other films that he's made and other content he's been involved in, obviously knows how to create like an atmospheric kind of horror thriller.
Yeah.
And I felt like, he was definitely very competent here in doing, he got the job done.
So even though it wasn't for me, I'd say check it out if you like. If you like early 2000s, late 90s horror, check it out, I'd say.
And if you like the Hellraiser films, I think fans are saying it's definitely like the best Hellraiser film that they've had in like 15 years at least. So
I would love for Clive Barker to come back, but I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I feel like he might be pissy. I feel like he might not be interested. I think
He's a bit of an artsy man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think he would, if he was going to make another Hellraiser film, I think he would make like an art house style horror, not a...
Yeah, well, I feel like he didn't want to be... When I say he was pissy, I feel like I've read something that he didn't want to be involved. Or, like,
I think he's signed over the rights to it at some point.
But how annoyed would you be if you, like, signed the rights to your, like, novella over and a quality film was made?
Yeah.
And then eventually it just becomes this, like, straight-to-video, like, franchise that's kind of just known for being bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a cash cow for somebody else.
Oh, so yeah. So on that note, I would say see the latest Hellraiser and let's make Hellraiser great again.
Jesus. Wept.
Yes. Well done. Thank you for listening to the Sinister Sissies podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Sinister Sissies for the time being. It may not be around for much longer. You can follow us on Instagram at Sinister_Sissies. We do have a Patreon, but it's closing soon, so I won't promote that. Until next time, which will be the final time,
where?
Stay sinister.